session number 18771, reel 4.
This is Watts, reel 4.
They were Mongols, very small and dark, very black, glittery eyes, but the captain who was with them spoke just the littlest bit of German. They did the thing that we knew already, because whatever they happened with them had gone before they arrived. We had been, word of mouth, had been told about it. They lined us all up and took our watches. They were very fond of watches. And because I knew this, my parents in peacetime had sometimes gone to fancy dress balls, and my mother, quite often as a gypsy, had worn terribly cheap glass, bright red ruby on a gold chain, and necklaces and bracelets and rings and stuff. So I put all this on. I had the rings and the bracelets and the... And this little Mongol that came facing me, his eyes just lit up, and I just handed everything over, and he went away. He was very happy. That was all right. We were allowed to sit down again. We had all been in the cellar, of course, with one candle. Obviously, there was no light, no electricity, no water, no gas. That's another experience which went before this. And very interestingly, before they actually came into the cellar, we all had our little corner. We'd been living in the cellars for, I don't remember, Battle of Berlin, 2 weeks or something like that. Didn't last so long in our section. When we heard them come down the steps, a very, very, very primitive instinct must have arisen in us, because all of a sudden, everybody, without saying anything, everybody got up off their chairs, and we all crowded together in the corner like animals. You know, safety in numbers, trying. So we were all allowed to sit down again. Then the captain came in again and started talking, and he had a pistol with a very long barrel, which he twirled round his finger, cowboy type, and went pfft. But of course he didn't shoot, you know, he just went pfft. And every time you thought, oh my God, you know, it's my turn. And then they went out, and everybody sort of, oh, that's it, we're alive, we've survived. The first night was all right. Yes, the first night nothing happened. The second night, no, the first night, to our horror, they all came down again and sat in a little anteroom to the cellar and started drinking vodka, eating very, very black, hard bread with fatty bacon and raw onions. And they invited us all to take part. Now, we didn't want to fraternize or anything, and at the same time, we didn't want to annoy them, because you don't annoy a Russian. So, we nibbled the onion, we nibbled the bread, we sipped a little bit of vodka, and then sort of quietly, as soon as possible, quietly disappeared. That was all right. The night passed, nothing happened. The second night was totally different. We passed the day, the next day, somehow. I think we went to the standpipes and got more water. But that night, they came into the cellar, and they wanted to drag the women out. Now, my mother and I were sharing a very, very small couch. She packed herself right on top of me, and I only had a little, tiny little air hole to breathe through. They didn't realize I was there. They dragged one woman out. She screamed like anything, obviously. They dragged... Her husband tried to interfere. They dragged him out into the anteroom, and she screamed, and we were just lying there petrified. And then there was a lot of shooting, and then she came back in. But they hadn't harmed her. And they hadn't harmed her husband either. And they went away. The next night happened the same. We were invited to drink and onion and black bread and fatty bacon. And then it came to going to bedtime, and we thought, what next? And then this miracle happened. A very lanky soldier appeared. He wasn't a Mongol, he was Western looking. And he looked around, sat down, and said to my mother in German, "Hi, mother." Right. Then it came to going back into the cellar to sleep, and he got up and gestured with his hand, "All in there, all in there." Then he said to my mother, "I have," in very, very broken German, "I am from Moscow, I Moscow. I one mother. One mother, one Volodya." That was his name. "Mother and Volodya, not this." And he made the communist sign of the fist. "Mother and Volodya, this." And he made the sign of the cross. And he said to my mother, "You sleep, mother." He put us all in the cellar. He closed the door. He had his Tommy gun. And he slept in front of the cellar door on the cement floor all night for the next fortnight. Now, is that a miracle? And when they went away, when the Americans came into our sector, they went away in a long column. And Volodya was in the last row. And we were standing at the window by that time, our flat upstairs. And he just waved once and then went.
Where was the cellar?
The cellar was a square block of flats, all connected. Underneath, all the German houses have a cellar below the ground floor, as they have an attic. And usually you had a certain space allocated to you where you could put all your overflow, you know, and your old beds and whatever you wanted to keep. But it had been adapted for shelter accommodation. And it had been reinforced with pillars and things. And basically, and also they had all been made intercommunicating so that you could go right round the whole block through the cellar. In the middle was a large area of lawn on which by that time rested a marvelous big Russian tank. And in the front lawns, at our section, they had buried two of their dead, which when they left, they dug up again and took with them. There were some lighter moments, shall we say, like when they pinched the bikes and tried to ride them and couldn't. If they came to a corner, They couldn't go round the corner with the bike. They went straight into the hedge. Like, a lot of them had never seen a proper toilet. A, they drank from it, or washed their hands in it. There's also a... I haven't experienced it myself, but there's an authenticated little story where this little Mongol from deepest Siberia saw an alarm clock which went off, and he promptly shot it with his Tommy gun. That happened too.
What was the address of the cellar?
The address?
Yes.
The same as mine. We lived in the road, a big block of flats, 6 flats to each house, and each house had a number. It wasn't like here, like my house, right?
What was the name of the street?
Björnsonstraße, B-J, O umlaut, R-N-S-O-N. Björnstjerne Björnson was a Swedish or Norwegian poet. So it was Björnsonstraße 26.
So it was meant to be in the American zone?
It became the American zone. First the Russians took it all. And they stayed with us, I cannot remember, for about 4 weeks. Something like that, 4 weeks, 6 weeks. I cannot remember. Then they withdrew, and the Americans moved in.
How did the Americans behave?
Very civilized. We greeted them as our saviors. You could talk to them. They rescued us from the Russians. They didn't see it that way, but we did. And interestingly, the general feeling of the population, and I know of the soldiers as well, because I've talked to some of them, when the war had just finished, the feeling in Germany then was, let's all unite. Which, of course, obviously was pie in the sky. Let's all unite, French, British, Americans, and the Germans, and beat hell out of the Russians. Yeah? Because we knew even then what they meant. We've always been nearer then. But there we are. I mean, that's a different...
But you got reasonable treatment from the GIs?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we had absolutely... Well, I personally have not heard anything. Not a thing. Not in Berlin. I mean, what happened while they were fighting and while they were under pressure themselves, how they behaved, I don't know. But when they moved into Berlin... Nothing, absolutely correct and, you know.
So what did you and your mother then do under American occupation?
The main thing was to get work, of which there was very little. Because Berlin, as I said before, was 99 point something or other destroyed. There was no transport. The shops had been looted beforehand, before the Russians moved in. There was no trade. There was nothing but barter. All the trees were plastered from top to bottom with little notices. One pair of blue shoes, size 37, hardly worn, will barter against half a pound of butter or something like that. In the shops there was only barter. You took what you thought you could, whatever. address or something and hope that you saw something which you needed more. No goods came in. Nothing was manufactured. Everything, a civilization, was at a complete standstill. It is unbelievable. And if you escape scot-free, a once-in-a-lifetime, very, very interesting experience. You know, a big city is dead. Everybody walked. Everywhere. You walked. You walked. And you walked. One side that way, the other one to meet you. We didn't walk on the pavements. We walked on the roads because there wasn't any transport anyway. You know, just spread out. Because people wanted to know, after it had finished, people wanted to know what had happened to the officers. People wanted to know what had happened to friends, relatives. You walked. And then, of course, you tried to get work. And the main, in where I lived, the main source of income, money didn't mean anything. What you needed was food. And if you managed to get work, no matter what it was, you usually got a higher ration card. And for the first few weeks, I worked in a garden nursery which grew vegetables, and they weren't going to pay us. They were going to pay us in kind, giving us vegetables. So after 4 weeks of... It was a very hot summer, very grueling work. We were weeding, we were watering by hand, one watering can in each hand, and after 4 weeks in the broiling sun, morning, noon and night, they gave us half a pound of green gooseberries. So I thought, this is not going to keep body and soul together. And by that time, the Americans were very well established, and word got around, if you can get into an American mess as a waitress, that is a good job to have. It so happened that quite near where we lived, the American MPs had taken up a large block of luxury flats and thrown everybody out. I don't know where they went. They weren't allowed to take the furniture, and they'd put their troops in there, and they had knocked two ground floor flats, adjacent ground floor flats, into a mess. Two large dining rooms, the bathrooms in the baths, and the baths were was the place where we washed the dishes. We started at 6 o'clock in the morning, scrubbing out, and we weren't just waitresses. We scrubbed the floors, we cleaned the windows, we polished the tables and all the rest of it. We served the breakfast. It was easy because it was only just, there weren't any orders to be taken. It was just, you know. Then we cleared the way, then we washed the dishes. I can't remember how many fellows we fed, but there were, I think there were three sittings. And we had to wash up in the bathtubs, plenty of hot water, because the Yanks got everything going straight away. And they put some awful yellow stuff into it to disinfect everything, which took the skin off our hands. But, yes, and then we served the lunch, and then we served the dinner. And we finished at 9 o'clock at night. 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock, Saturday and Sunday included. No holidays, no free days. If you didn't like it, there were 10,000 others outside licking their fingers for something like that. But we got food, you see.
What kind of food?
exactly the same food and as much as we wanted as the troops. Initially, we were not allowed to take anything out, but eventually, quite soon, they said, you can take out what you don't eat.
Cooked food.
Cooked food. We could take out, now for instance, my mother had lost a lot of weight and she was very, very thin. So I took out a lot of white bread, thickly spread with peanut butter. We could take out any food we liked. So we organized it. We all had big carry-alls and containers. We took porridge with cream and sugar, all the energy foods that were very, very necessary, high energy foods. We took, you could take all the meat you wanted. And we usually, they had, the troops had big tins for juice. And some other tins, sugar tins, I think, they were khaki colored, had a screw and they were metal. And we just put everything in there. And when I came home at night, our kitchen, which was by then the only habitable place in our flat, was filled with all the neighbors waiting for a meal. And we helped that way. It was hard work.
How did the American MPs in the mess treat you?
Absolutely okay. Absolutely okay. They weren't fraternized. Well, not at that time. Later they fraternized. And some of them took a delight telling us that we would all freeze in the winter. Some of them said, I don't like the krauts, because they call us krauts. You know why?
Sauerkraut.
Sauerkraut, yeah. But no molesting or anything. I haven't experienced it. So, you know.
How long did this go on for?
That was the summer of
45
to through the winter, because that's how we got through the winter, my mother and I, to the middle of 46. Yeah, and the winter was hard because we had no heating, obviously. We had pinched a little, or as you said in those days, organized a little wood-burning stove, which somebody had connected to the outside for us. But it was so cold, the winter was so cold, it was 10 degrees below zero, that we slept in one bed, of course, for warmth. I used to take all my clothes into bed for half an hour, put them on under the blankets, under the eiderdowns we had in those days, and didn't wash. Did I wash? Did we have water? Yes, we did have water. I suppose I wet a flannel and that was all. We were allowed afterwards to use one of the bathrooms in the barracks, let's call it barracks, to have a shower once in a while. And the bread was frozen in the kitchen. We had to dip it in hot water to be able to eat it.
Were people coming out of the Soviet zone?
Yes, there were. Now that is much. Yes, there were. There also were a lot of homecoming soldiers. And I remember very vividly being reminded of Gone with the Wind, which I had read in German before the war, where the soldiers come home and they're being fed on the plantations and what have you, and there's a trickle of them, And we had exactly the same trickle in Berlin. Somehow, there's quite a few strayed up to us on the third floor. And I was always a bit frightened, because my mother would open the door. Well, she didn't need to open the door. The door was open because it had been unhinged and we couldn't hinge it back. She let anybody in. And she shared what we had, because I did bring in quite a bit of food. She shared what we had. And I was always frightened in case someday there might be somebody who wasn't quite so trustworthy, and not that we had any valuables. We had sent out, as it was called, before the real bombing started. That's another story. That's too far. It's going too far now. And what little bits of jewelry I had, or very, very modest little pieces, I had hidden in my sewing basket. I had unraveled balls of wool and then wrapped them around my ring and my bracelet and my watch, and it was just sitting there quite innocently. But I was frightened. I thought, well, and of course my mother, being, as I mentioned in the beginning, a very Christian woman, said, I am doing that in God's name and he will not let me down. And I wasn't so sure.
So your job in the mess came to an end in 46.
In 46.
What happened to you then?
Then I, by the way, yes, in 46, I became an interpreter in the very end and ran around in a jeep with them, because I picked up my English quite quickly. And then I went into the... We were on the borders of the French, British and American sectors. We were American sector, but on the borders. So I heard that there was a job going in the British sector. And I made inquiries, and I was lucky, and I became what was known a bat woman.
A what?
a bat woman, B-A-T.
Like a Batman. The equivalent of a Batman.
Batman, right. We had, again, a block of flats filled with English ladies of... I think they belonged to the army or whatever, the civil administration, and we did the cleaning. Everybody had two flats, and you dusted and polished and vacuumed, made the beds, washed out the occasional blouse or nylons, and that was it. You were given a midday meal. And that was quite an eye-opener. We started to realize that the poor British people were quite badly off. Americans were absolutely wading in everything. But not the British. Not the British. So I battered away there, dusted and cleaned and vacuumed and all the rest of it, polished. And what happened then? That's right. We were hungry again, my mother and I.